Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Almeen. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations on a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
So in other words, if I may interrupt, so the meridian points intersecting are those little minor chakras or whatever you want to call it in the body, and where they intersect on the earth is like the chakras or the mini chakras of the earth. And when people go to the earth sacred sites, does it also affect their own energy lines in form of the chakra points?
It definitely does. I mean, what I think I would like to do, though, is just distinguish between the Ayurvedic, the Ayurvedic chakra system and the Chinese meridian.
They are
two different systems, and they overlap or overlay over one another. So it's more helpful to think as, let's think of this. It's more helpful to think of the Chinese meridian system as our ley line sacred site system on our body, and the chakras as potentials of what we can become, energy centers that overlay over the endocrine glands. So you could kind of have a differentiation there. Each of the seven major chakras correlate to each of the seven major endocrine glands and represent the potentiality or the progression that is within you that you can obtain. The Chinese meridian system is different. So the energy anatomy is very complicated because you have many different systems that overlay over one another, like spider webs would be over one another. You could kind of think of it in that picture. But the Celts also talked about the dragon lines as well. And of course, dragons are a very big archetype of mythology and, you know, Chinese lore and Oriental lore and Celtic and Druidic lore. And they now call them the Michael lines that run through Europe. Particularly, they're very well known in England. And most of the major stone circle points are along either the Michael or the Mary line. There's two main lines. Again, you could think of them as yin and yang, Mary being the yin, Michael being the yang. And these two major lines intersect right kind of perpendicular at a diagonal through England. But definitely going to sacred sites affects you as well, and vice versa. If you do work on certain acupuncture points on and in your body, that also corresponds to sacred sites on the earth. So really, on one level, you don't have to go anywhere. If you do work on yourself personally and spiritually and emotionally, it also affects those sites wherever they are on the earth.
That is wonderful. So in other words, the earth entrains us, and we entrain the earth. And I think it is Greg Braden that has quoted some studies that were done about how areas where happy events have happened on the earth and some energy is kept or memory is kept, how it entrains the body when you're in that area, and vice versa. When somebody's very happy, it affects the earth. So that is what you're saying. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, there are many intuitives and clairvoyants, many intuitives and clairvoyants that have the capability of feeling kinesthetically in their body events that are happening on various parts of the planet, like maybe an earthquake that's to come in Singapore or a catastrophe that, you know, is about to occur. Hopefully that doesn't have to occur, but if it does, some clairvoyants are very in tune with that. From my perspective, it is through the filter of the meridian system that they are able to receive that information about various parts of the earth, because they have points on their own body that correlate to those parts of the earth, and they're just very in tune with that system, whether they acknowledge or understand from a logical perspective that system or not. From a Chinese medicine perspective, it's that system that is the interplay between their third dimensional 3D body and another part of the planet.
So, in other words, the interconnectedness of all life, if we really can understand that, we will understand how the slightest action on our part has ramifications that touch us all. And what I'm hearing you say, which is fascinating to me, is that the Ayurvedic system, which you're also very familiar with, and by the way, I so appreciate the multiple expertises that you have. It makes you very multifaceted, and I have, through the years, many times gone to her for advice on healing when I'm stumped with people that I have been working with, so I appreciate that. But the chakras, what I'm hearing her say is that the information that the chakras work with is information that comes from, quote, let's just pretend there's an outside to us, because really we are a consciousness superimposed over all that is. But it is coming from the outside in. It is potential. That the seven levels of light hit the chakra system, that they are then downloaded into the endocrine system. The endocrine system downloads it into the blood system, and it is felt as non-cognitive information in the form of feelings by the heart. Right brain then interprets it, and then comes a very major issue of energy. Our show is on energy today, and that is that the subtle information in our environment, which I want to speak more to her about, is everywhere. Our right brain is interpreting it as it travels the route we have just discussed. But the right brain's interpretation of the non-cognitive information in our environment, energy plays a vital role in that, because all initial energy is taken up by the left brain. And it is when our minds are finally quiet. And so many shows have spoken about how important it is to achieve that stillness, and we continue to say how it is to achieve that stillness, and we can certainly recap it if we have time on the show later today. But the left brain will suck up all available energy of the body. Only the surplus goes to right brain. If we obsess about the questions, if we judge and resist life and so on, well, there isn't any surplus. And so we become very logic-based, and we cannot access this vast ocean of subtle information. It is when there is stillness that there is the extra energy to then be accessed by right brain for the interpretation of what right brain has accessed. And then it becomes available to us. So what she is saying is that the chakra system deals with this outside information, the potential in our lives that's waiting to become. And that, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that the meridians that the Chinese study, and incidentally, folks, I was in England and discovered there a device developed by the Russians that for the first time ever actually demonstrates these energy lines that she is speaking of, called the meridians of the body. In fact, it showed up as blue, and they could see exactly where there were blockages, where there was a weakness in the flow, and then with ion treatment they could tend to those areas of the meridian, which of course she approaches in various ways, which we'll interview her about today. But the point is that it is now visible. Science has met the ancient science of the Chinese Oriental medicine, and it can now demonstrate the lines that they have known for eons exist. But that deals with the energy that already exists and the information flow that is already within our bodies. Have I interpreted what you said correctly?
Yes, I think that would be a good way of putting that. There are many systems to energy anatomy that overlay over one another. You have this is some of the chakras, as we talked about. And the word chakra, it's a Sanskrit word. It literally means wheel. And rishis and sages and, you know, great saints throughout the centuries from the East, you know, have had the intuitive capability of seeing these wheels. And they kind of, they liken them to wheels of light spinning. And depending on how much a person is embracing his or her potential, the wheels either spinning, you know, at a rapid rate or at a slow rate or at a counterclockwise rate or at a clockwise rate, or there's you know, each chakra, you know, if you're progressing like we're all progressing, will be at a different rate. And you know, it just really depends on how much capacity you are embracing of your potential in your life. So the Ayurvedic Hindu and Buddhist chakra system is different than the Chinese acupuncture system. I do kind of think of the Chinese acupuncture system as the interface between you and the physical world, you and the 3D, you and the earth that you live on. Whereas, again, I think of the chakra system as what you can become. There's also another system.
I am so sorry. Could I ask you, after our commercial break, to come back and give us the other system that you are just getting ready to tell us about? And we'll take a little break, and please join us right back after, and we will have her explain about another energy system that pertains to the body. Thank you for joining us on Walking Between the Worlds.
Thank you.
Mystic, seer, healer, and teacher of God consciousness. Her students, masters, discover the personal power by shedding layers of social conditioning while attaining the power of forgiveness, silence, and self-reliance. Explore with Almin as your ultimate guide the mysteries of the cosmos through her series of CDs, books, online magazine, seminars, and workshops. Discover your own personal past to manifestation, ascendancy, and enlightenment by visiting Almin on the web at www.spiritualjourneys.com. That's www.spiritualjourneys.com. Reclaim your right to live a life of mystery and magic, and log on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Walking Between the Worlds with Almin. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Almin.
Welcome back to our listeners, and we are discussing this morning our interfacing with the world of energy. In the West, things are viewed much differently. We have tended to view things very, very concretely. While ancient cultures like India and China have long since studied this world of energy in their medicine and in many different ways, we have with us as a guest today somebody that's, of course, very dear to my heart. Her name is Almin as well, and she is my middle daughter. And she has studied worldwide in various systems of medicine and is a licensed acupuncturist and studies herbology with the Colanderos in South America and Central America. She has studied all over the world. We have her now at this time explaining to us, and welcome back with us, Almin. I certainly appreciate your presence here. It's a delight and a surprise to me. Could you please tell us, you told us a little bit about the Ayurvedic and so on. You said that there was another system that works with energy and healing.
you could kind of, I mean, we're like an onion in a sense. We have many systems of energy that are superimposed upon one another that represent different facets of ourselves, where we're going, where we have been, where we are. So we've spoken about the Chinese medicine system and how it represents kind of the energy system of the earth, if you will, called feng shui lines or dragon lines or ley lines by mystics. And then we have spoken about the Ayurvedic chakra system, which represents the potential of who you can become. The energy systems from Eastern philosophy that I'm more familiar with, there's another set of lines called the Ida and the Pingala. And those two lines are also from an Ayurvedic tradition, and they kind of weave through in and out of the chakras that overlay kind of etherically or energetically, if you will, over each of the seven major endocrine glands. When yogis and the rishis and great seers of the East have emitted certain frames of consciousness within their beings or have obtained certain levels of consciousness, various secretions from the endocrine glands pertaining to that particular chakra that they've just mastered then become released. And it's those endocrine secretions that create the appearance on the outward level of agelessness. And so the chakra system, you could really think of it, if you want to put it more in a logical framework, has a lot to do with the endocrine system.
So, for instance, when they release the white gold that you find on the cap of the skull in these elevated states, I've done it myself, and then my hairdresser says, what is this yellow sulfur-like powder? And at times it tends to be yellow-whitish. It's part of the endocrine system releasing because the crown chakra has been mastered.
Yes, I mean there's many different, you know, ways and manifestations that these endocrine secretions come about. I think that it really depends on, you know, various, you know, things and how it manifests. It's said in the East that the Buddha, when he attained enlightenment, began to emit what they call sharira, and sharira are like these little teeny diamond gems. And they used to say that it would come out of the top of his head, that they were actual kind of diamond-like, sort of kind of icosahedron diamond structures. And, you know, much like we preserve the bones of saints in Catholic traditions, in the East they preserve these little gem-like stones and jewel-like structures that come out of saints' heads when they've attained a certain level of enlightenment. So there's various ways I think that it would manifest, in the human body, and I think that everybody will do it differently. There's certain guideposts or roadmaps, and that's what, you know, these energy systems are. But I think that everybody is very unique, and you have to, you know, see that it will manifest differently in people. The good news is, though, is that, you know, there probably are some major landmarks that the human being and body and higher self experience, and that's basically what the great sages and saints of the world have given us. They've given us the wisdom of the ways that they have passed through these various states of consciousness so that, you know, when they happen to other people in the West, maybe who are not as aware of traversing the internal landscape, that they have some type of roadmap. So we really owe a lot to, you know, the saints and sages that, and the seers that have come before us. I always like to acknowledge them because we in the West would not have any idea as to even what energy anatomy is. I mean, from, you know, the Chinese meridian system to the Ayurvedic chakra system to next we'll move on to the what they call the Ida and the Pingala, excuse me. And those are two lines, much like the dragon lines that we spoke of, kind of crisscrossing in these beautiful figure eight patterns and then intersecting at the sacred sites. The Ida and the Pingala are kind of the main yin and yang line of the body from an Ayurvedic perspective, that crisscross through the seven chakras that overlay over the endocrine glands. So there's another facet then to the Ayurvedic energy anatomical system that is even more in depth. So these Pingala lines have to do with the development of the seven chakras. So there's another aspect to that. Certain divine personalities, and we know that we all are divine personalities, but I don't see more developed personalities that come down to the earth only with the agenda of serving, so to speak. In the East, they call these avatars or bodhisattvas in Buddhism. The Dalai Lama could be considered one. He's considered the bodhisattva of compassion. The word avatar is a Sanskrit word. It means to descend. And it's spoken, this concept is spoken of in many of the Buddhist and Hindu texts, but these beings that come down, called avatars or bodhisattvas, that come down solely for the purpose of assisting humanity and guiding us through various ages, can see yet another energy anatomical system. And this is a very, very, subtle. We think that the meridian system, or that the chakra system, is subtle. This is one of the most subtle systems that can be seen by an avatar or a bodhisattva. And this system really is only expounded upon in the book called Answers by Mother Mira. She's really the first avatar to expand upon the next system I'm going to mention. And she talks about white and red lines in the body that only avatars can see, and she says that they're thinner than a hair, and that only divine personalities or avatars can undo these knots in this hair-like structure that runs up and back behind the legs, meets at the base of the spine, and then goes through, up the spine, through the crown chakra. This is not, she differentiates in her book, and this is something I'm not speaking on anybody's behalf here, I'm just advocating that you read her book. She expounds upon this from a really practical way. It's a very interesting read. It's a Q&A book, so it's very easy to read. But if you are interested in energy anatomy, she does say that these red and white lines that are thinner than a hair are different than any other energy system in the body, and that they're the most subtle. So those are lines that I don't have any experience of as far as working with or anything like that. According to her, only avatars or bodhisattvas have the capability of working with those lines with people.
And may I just break for 1 second? We have another commercial break coming up, but can you please give people your website? I believe we have a link to it on my website, but please give them your website in case they're interested in contacting you further.
Yes, my website is www.imacupuncture.com, and that's all one word, imtacupuncture.com.
Thank you so much, and please join us again as she explains further, and we will come right back after this commercial break.
The book Journey to the Heart of God, Mystical Keys to Immortal Mastery. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for more than the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like the automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting, from which it is transcribed. Few who have entered into God consciousness leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of the mortal master, in addition to continue function among the masses. But as a Tolkien, Nagra, and receive. Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. It's an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. These sacred messages show the true identity of mankind as life beacons of creation and ratios back to the heart of God. Within this book, some of the mysteries of the cosmos that played seals for eons have been solved for the first time. Never before in the history of any mystery schools has such illuminating revelations challenged everything we thought we knew about the destiny of man. With every fiber of our beings and in the depth of our hearts truth, no matter how profound, can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. To receive a copy of this book, 3-year CDs, online magazine, workshop, or lecture downloads, go to www.almin.com or call 502-499-0016.
Source of love and life, a goddess was born to banish the night, to work in magic of life and spirit, gladdening hearts with mystical spell. The long night is over, the dawn has begun, upon the earth the goddess has come. To turn the key that turns the page, and ends the darkness of a bygone age. Farm and elf, it says the light, at the end of the dark and sleepless night. Every kingdom the news resounds, the goddess reigns, and joy abounds.
Between the Worlds with Al Mean. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Al Mean.
Welcome back to our listeners on Walking Between the Worlds. And Al Mean, who is my daughter and a very, very masterful healer, has just explained that there is a more subtle system that mostly just avatars know about, a white and a red line that crisscrosses through the chakras. Now, you can read more about that and see the illustration of it in my book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms, on page 284. In the Immortal Master, the Alpha chakra, which is a hand length below the spine, and the second heart, which is on the sternum, are fully opened. That's really the first time that the energy properly flows through these energy meridians, and they move sideways in women and front to back in men through the centers where the chakras used to be before they form what's basically a unified chakra field in a master. The meridians end slightly above the pineal gland, and they cause it to excrete life hormones for heightened bliss and immortality. And what you will find is when you enter the second phase, we have been speaking about the stages and phases of man on many of the shows, but when you enter that phase of your ascended mastery called the immortality stage, it starts actually to excrete a substance that is tasted like a sweet fluid in the back of the palate. I wanted to ask you, Almin, we have about another few minutes, and then we've got another guest that we wanted to welcome. Can you tell us, in the acupuncture system that you have studied, I believe that there is a deeper, more spiritually connected, shall we say, more esoteric body of information. Can you tell us what the difference is between that and normal acupuncture?
Well, there are many schools of acupuncture, and that's something that I actually didn't even understand when I was looking to pursue my education in acupuncture schools. I didn't have that information at the time. And there are many, many different schools of thought. There's the Korean system. There's the Japanese system. There is the five element system. There's the TCM system of traditional Chinese medicine. There's the classical system. Boy, there's many, many ways of working with those points and those lines in the body. The French really have even specialized and become very, very acute and have developed a level of expertise, but just specifically working with the very fine subtle points in the ears. And so the French have really become masters of auricular acupuncture. So there's many different schools of thought out there. The Shaolin monks are really, I think, to be applauded for developing acupuncture and for bringing it out to the public at all, even in China. Shaolin monks lived in very remote regions in China, and you know, you don't have hospitals out there and you don't have ambulances and that kind of a thing. And the Shaolin believed that in order to master the internal, you must master first what you could see. And so martial arts and getting to the divine through physical movements, such as sparring, such as Shaolin martial arts, things of that nature, were seen as a spiritual discipline. So many disciplines believe that in order to develop the internal, you must master the external first, and basically kind of move through the layers, so to speak, of, you know, physicality in order to get to the most subtle. The Sufis do this through dervishing, etc., using their body in whirling motions. So the Shaolin developed a very beautiful, esoteric way of working with things like alchemy, working with things like long life elixirs, working with acupuncture in a way that was very subtle, yet also very practical, because when you're sparring and you're doing martial arts, you know, they were breaking bones, they were, you know, having injuries, they were, you know, having all kinds of issues that also dealt with the physical body. And so they not only developed, as they mastered the physical through martial arts, ways of treating the physical body, they also developed very, very subtle systems of acupuncture, of mastering the more subtle spheres that they became familiar with. So we really owe, I think, a great deal of what we know to the Shaolin monks. The Shaolin monks, you know, they're formulas for treating broken bones, for treating sprains and injuries, are just par none, because they became experts in that field through the martial arts. But yet also they became very acute experts of Taoist thinking and of living in these secluded hermitages, where they were also able to master the subtle spheres. If you really want to look at beautiful systems of esoteric acupuncture, and there are two books out there actually called Esoteric Acupuncture. There's Volume 1 and Volume 2, and they even look at how acupuncture meridian ley lines lay over the Kabbalah Tree of Life and over the Merkaba that Drumbelow talks about. And there's just many, many, many ways of framing how to work with a patient. One acupuncturist will do completely different points than another acupuncturist for the exact same issue, and it's because they're using a different framework, filter, or school of thought.
But all of them,
with those meridian lines.
I'm so sorry, but all of them is to enhance the flow of the energy, and in enhancing the flow of energy, it restores the health. Is that correct?
Yes, you could think of, you know, blocked energy in a body as like a kinked hose, you know, from an acupuncture perspective. So that's what acupuncture and various systems of energy medicine do, is that they kind of unkink the hose and thereby allowing free-flowing, what we call qi in Chinese medicine, or qi in Japanese medicine. There's a very interesting...
I'm so sorry. Please continue.
There's a very interesting system that developed out of Japan called Toyohari. And Toyohari truly is, I think, one of the more subtle systems of working with these energy ley lines. it basically stemmed from the fact that the shogun or the emperor needed a doctor to treat his or her mistresses and concubines and wives in the great palace, in the shogun's palace in Japan. And because it was not allowed for doctors to see women at that time, he only employed blind acupuncturists. And so these acupuncturists who were blind developed a very, very powerful way, because obviously they couldn't see even, you know, various landmarks on the body to palpate from. They became very, very acute at doing needleless acupuncture. And these blind acupuncturists throughout Japan became incredibly adept at working with the very subtle nature of the acupuncture meridians and points in the body, because they weren't relying on anything external as far as sight, and so they had really developed on a very deep level their sixth sense of working with what the Japanese called ki, or the Hindus called prana, or the Chinese called qi. And so Toyohari acupuncture is very interesting. There are many practitioners in the States today that have gone to Japan or that have learned from Japanese masters how to work with the acupuncture points in this system, in this very, very subtle way. And I have experienced it once or twice. It is extraordinarily powerful. It's a really beautiful way of getting in touch with that system on a truly deep level. And if you think about the fact that it was developed by blind acupuncturists from, you know, the days of the samurai and the geisha and things like this, it really has a very interesting feel to it.
And a wonderful background. That's a fascinating story. I had no idea that existed.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
And for our listeners as well, disease is not an accident. These knots that she is speaking of that happens in the meridians that need to be cleared by these various systems that she speaks of are generally the result of incorrect attitudes, social learning, distortion of frequency in the body. My daughter Almin, who is with us speaking right now, has also studied sound healing, how specific frequencies can heal and untie these areas and release the flow of the energy along these energy lines. We will now say goodbye to Almin, and once again, her website is linked to ours if you want to study a little bit further about the interesting facets that she has discussed. And when we get back, we will welcome back Dr. Anne Gehman, who's a psychometrist that works with energy. Thank you very much for joining us on Walking Between the Worlds. We now break for a commercial.
Thank you.
Is a globally recognized mystic, seer, healer, and teacher of God consciousness. Her students, masters, discover their personal power by shedding layers of social conditioning while attaining the power of forgiveness, silence, and self-reliance. Explore with Almin as your total guide the mysteries of the cosmos through her series of CDs, books, online magazine, seminars, and workshops. Discover your own personal path to manifestation, ascendancy, and enlightenment by visiting Almin on the web at www.spiritualjourneys.com. That's www.spiritualjourneys.com. Reclaim your right to live a life of mystery and magic. And log on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Walking Between the Worlds. Worlds with Al Mean. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Al Mean.
Welcome back to our listeners, and we also welcome on the line with us at this time, Dr. Anne Geeman. She has been a world-class throughout her life and is continuing to be a world-class parapsychologist, and she's was actually elected to the International Congress of Parapsychologists and Paraphysicists in Prague, in Czechoslovakia. She does phenomenal work with psychometry, which is very much a function of energy, and we will have her explain to us as soon as possible what exactly that is, but she is considered one of the 100 psychics in the country today. Dr. Geeman, welcome onto our show, and please explain to us a little bit of what psychometry is, please.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I'd like to clarify that I don't have the title of doctor. I am an ordained minister.
It's reverend, I see.
Yes, uh-huh. And also, I don't consider myself a parapsychologist. I am a psychic and I am a medium. And while I have a deep interest in parapsychology, I see that as a very special area of most of us would call science, but others might call it a pseudoscience. But to talk about psychometry, the word comes from the Greek root word psycho, meaning mind or soul, metro or metron, meaning to measure. So we could say it's soul measuring. In other words, it's reading the soul of things. This can be done through touch. Like many times when I give a private reading for an individual, I will ask to hold a watch or a ring, something that they wear or carry. And as I touch that object, because they have worn it over a period of time or carried it with them, it has blended with their auric emanation, which carries everything about them. It carries their information about their spiritual growth and their intellect. It carries their emotions and memory patterns. Everything is recorded within that. And so when I give a reading, very often I hold an object and I begin to get just a series of information that flows through my consciousness to share with them.
And I've heard some fascinating stories about your assistance to law enforcement and how you have really been very key in solving some very major, major crime scenes. Can you give us an explanation of perhaps one or two of them and how it worked, Dr. Geeman? Actually, Reverend Geeman, I beg your pardon.
First of all, I think of myself more as maybe a laboratory for that would give information as opposed to actually solving crimes. I don't think that any psychic or medium really solves crimes, because we really must give credit to those law enforcement investigators and agents who do such hard work to solve crimes in our world today. And I think that what we can do as psychics and as mediums is to simply give them information that assists them in doing their work. I'm trying to quickly think of some of the cases I've worked on. One was the Crazy Joe Spaziano, who I believe is in jail in Florida, but he was known for the dump murder case. And I recall that an investigator came in to see me. His secretary had referred him to me. He came in as a total skeptic, and it was interesting because under his arm he carried a box, and of course I had no idea at first what was in it, but I knew I had to break through skepticism to be able to be successful with this investigation or to give information about this. And so I actually attuned myself with him and was able to tell him things about himself and his family. And as he sat there and wept over this, I knew that I'd really touched his heart and soul, and I was able to then proceed with the investigative reading. So when I touched inside the box, I felt something that was bony-like, and I suddenly realized that this was a skull of from a body that had been found some time before, and they had no identity. So I was able to give a reading from that, helping to identify the person. But I also knew that where that body was found, that there were others. And so I went with the investigator to the location and told him where he could find the other bodies. And I believe there were about six of them, five or six, and they were known as the dump murders because it was close to an area where garbage and things were dumped. I was later called in for pre-trial deposition, and because they were concerned for my life with this, because this was the crimes were carried out by a motorcycle gang, and they were concerned for me, so I didn't go in after all. But this all occurred back in the, I believe it was in the late 60s or early 70s. So that was one case. I was also someone involved in the, can't remember his name right now. Anyway, the serial killer, Ted Bundy case.
Yes.
And was able to give some information that was helpful on that. But to say that I had actually solved those crimes, I won't take credit for that.
Well,
I simply gave helpful information.
Of course, we know they put the pieces together, but
right,
I've heard you give very big pieces to Reverend Geeman. And the how is it that they communicate to you, and how do you filter out information that's irrelevant?
Well,
from an object, for example.
I don't try to filter it out because I keep my own mind out of the way, my own thinking, and I just trust the process that through the law of attraction, the law of vibration, that information that is needed and helpful at the time will come through, and I just give everything that I sense and feel, trusting the process.
So in other words, it's very similar to what the previous guest was speaking about, how important it is that the silence of the mind allows energy to flow properly. It's when the thoughts come in that it blocks it. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, exactly. One of the most important things for a medium and a psychic to work toward in the early part of their unfoldment is that of getting them their ego and their own thinking out of the way.
And also, so many start-up psychics, shall we say, people that are new to it, and of course one has to start somewhere,
right,
are invested in being right. And sometimes one simply doesn't know the answer. And it is in that humility that the silence is. It's when the mind starts to want to know that it gets in the way. Is that what you mean by ego?
Correct. Exactly. Exactly. And for me as a medium, and I know that there are psychics who do wonderful work and who are very talented, but I consider myself not only a psychic but a medium, or one who communicates with those in the unseen world. So I feel that in my work I have a very strong connection with my spirit guides and teachers, and I totally trust that process and that communication from the unseen world to bring forth information that is accurate.
And can you give any kind of a hint to our listeners as to how to develop, how do they tap into this wealth of visual and auditory and intuitive information? How do they query the database? And in what forms will they receive answers?
Mm-hmm. Well, every person is very different, and it'll be different for everyone according to their own talent, their own ability. I believe that spirit always works along the line of least resistance. And so some people are more auditory, some are more visual, some are more simply sensing and feeling. And so spirit will work through us according to our own those pathways, you see, within us. And as to how it's developed or unfolded, I believe it's something we all have, by the way. But I believe there are no quick, easy steps toward unfoldment. And again, just like there are many, many different types and techniques of meditation, a person has to explore and find the pathway that is right for them, you see.
And also believe when they receive information that it is valid to act upon.
Exactly. But I believe that the most important part of this toward unfoldment is having a very active prayer life and daily meditation. I believe that finding that attunement with the infinite, that attunement with the unseen world, is the most valuable process we can work toward. And then we learn to trust.
That is very, very helpful. And to trust not only that perfection that underlies all appearances, but also to trust ourselves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we do that by finding that daily attunement through prayer, through meditation.
And Reverend Gaiman, I would imagine also that some people, if they have preconceived notions as to what psychic abilities would look like, that can also stand in the way because of that uniqueness that each individual has, a unique way of accessing subtle information.
I would agree, yes, uh-huh.
Oh, there is our cue. It is time for us to end the show. Dr. Gaiman, hundreds of thanks for you for coming upon the show today and speaking with our listeners. We thank you very much, and we're also very grateful for those of you that tune in regularly and has actually helped us make another 13 weeks of shows ahead. And next week we will look at a time of miracles that is at hand and speak to someone that has experienced these miracles firsthand, and please join us then for the advent of a time of miracles. Thank you again for joining us on Walking Between the Worlds.